WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It isn't just common wisdom that good hospital nursing care increases the odds of a good recovery. A recent study published in the New England Journal of Medicine found that in hospitals with proportionately low numbers of registered nurses, patients are more likely to have urinary tract infections, hospital-acquired pneumonia, and gastrointestinal bleeding. These findings come at a time when many hospitals have cut back their nursing staffs to save money, while other hospitals are having trouble filling nursing positions. Another recent study, published in the health policy journal Health Affairs, showed many hospital nurses are burned out by staff shortages and rising patient loads. My guests are two veteran registered nurses. Kim Armstrong is a staff nurse at a high-risk obstetrics unit in a hospital in the Seattle-Tacoma area. Audrey Ludmer works in the perioperative care center of a major Manhattan hospital in a unit that performs endoscopies and colonoscopies. Both Armstrong and Ludmer work in hospitals that have fewer nurses than they used to. I asked Audrey Ludmer how that affects the amount of time she can spend with each patient.
I'm lucky in the area I've chosen to work, and I think part of the reason I chose to work there is that I get to work with one patient at a time. Because of the nature of my work, I can only be with one patient. But I'm under constant pressure to, you know, do an assembly line kind of thing, to get them in and get them out, and can't you do another case, can't you do another case, can't you do another case? Mm-hmm. So yes, it affects, and even though it's a short-term thing, you would like to do some teaching, a little pre-op relief of anxiety, a little pre-op teaching, and something about what's going to happen afterwards. But at times, you rush it. You don't not do it. You just don't do it as well. And you pray to God when you ask, do you have any questions, that the answer is no, because you may or may not have the moment to answer those questions. And I feel bad for a patient who's frightened because they need those extra few minutes. And sometimes you're really under pressure to not give it to them.
Kim Armstrong, how is your day-to-day work affected by the fewer number of registered nurses at your hospital now?
Well, I agree with Audrey. I'm lucky in the area that I work in that I'm primarily, when a patient's in active labor, I'm one-to-one care. However, it has still affected me even in that one-to-one care because we've decreased the amount of support systems we have. I pass dietary trays. I do phlebotomy. I do respiratory therapy treatments, various other things. I go from the moment that a patient enters my unit in labor through the recovery period. I take care of the baby after they're born. And all of it is done more or less as fast as we can do it. You know, we're moving at 100% when we get there and oftentimes have to flex up to 120%. And there's other patients coming in that are not in active labor that you still try to oversee. So the lack of backup systems has affected me even in my one-to-one care. When I'm having to clean up instruments and make beds and that kind of thing, that does affect the time that I could be spending elsewhere more profitably with the patient and teaching them about their health.
Now, Kim Armstrong, I understand the hospital where you work in the Tacoma, Seattle area is bringing in nurses from other countries. Why are they doing that?
Because they need nurses on the floor. My hospital does have posted positions for nurses, lots of them, in all sorts of specialty areas. They are bringing them in because they see it as a solution, even if it's a short-term solution, to their staffing needs. In the state of Washington last year, or this year actually, we passed a mandatory overtime law which prohibits employers and hospitals from forcing people to stay and work over their assigned hours. And you know, that's a very good first step in preventing what I call is abuse of nurses. This is one of their answers to it. If they can't get people to stay over voluntarily, they still have patients that they need to care for. So they have recruited from the Philippines.
And how do you feel about that?
I think it's one of the most unethical ways to do any kind of business that there is.
Why is it unethical?
You have a country, oftentimes a third world country, that America, because they have the bucks, can go over and recruit these nurses away from their country. It severely impacts that country's ability to provide health care to their own people. So even in countries like the Philippines that actually graduate more nurses than they need, these nurses are not the new graduates that are coming. They are the experienced nurses from that country coming here. Once these nurses get here, it's almost like they're indentured servants.
Audrey Ludmer, do you have a similar situation in the hospital in New York where you were?
This is not a new problem in the hospitals in New York City. We used to have H-1 visa nurses coming in, and it was very similar to what Kim just talked about, in that the hospital sponsored them and the country allowed them in H-1 visas. The H-1 visas went away a number of years ago when it was prophesied that there would be too many nurses. And there was a Pew study that came out, and we were going to be extremely overstaffed and way too many nurses. So H-1 visa nurses seemed to go away. Schools of nursing closed. People went and found other professions. Hospitals started laying off nurses. It was very interesting to live through it. Very strange, but very interesting. As the population got sicker, the nurses became fewer. So it's not a new phenomena. It's not just the Philippines, but Korea, India, England, Ireland. The biggest problem is the cultural problem. The nurses from other countries and other countries themselves just have different cultural norms. And at times it becomes frustrating for both the nurse and for the patient in trying to communicate.
In addition to the language barrier, give me an example of the kind of cultural difference that you're talking about.
Just of what is acceptable as far as communication, what is acceptable as far as education, how you're treated as a patient, what is expected of you as a nurse. Many of the foreign nurses are not quite as assertive as American nurses are. So when you're trying to deal with a medical establishment and sometimes you're trying to get your point across, something is lacking in the fact of a nurse knowing that the doctor is, quote-unquote, her superior.
To me, when you're a patient and you're trying to impress upon the nurse, something's going wrong, I need help, they might not get it.
They may get it, but if the physician is not catching on quickly, they may let it go.
They may just defer and not push for
exactly.
It.
Right. Exactly.
And that's a huge problem because I don't know about other states, but in my state, my license is based on what I do for the patient. I am not responsible to my hospital, to the physicians, to anybody else. I am directly responsible by law to the patient for the quality of care they receive. I take that very seriously. These nurses coming in from other areas are not usually as assertive. I work with foreign nurses now, and even after years of being in the United States, they have a tendency to defer to the physician. And in some areas, you can't do that. And it's very frightening for these nurses, in my mind, that once they're here, if things don't work out for them, they're going to feel trapped.
Because in order to stay in the States, they have to keep the contract with the hospital?
That's correct.
So they don't want to rock the boat?
No.
Do you think the foreign nurses are being hired at your hospital because nurses aren't applying for the positions, or are the foreign nurses paid cheaper wages? Is there a kind of financial issue there, too?
Yeah, they will not be paid a cheaper rate than what the nurses here, because we're under contract. My hospital does have a union, so they will come in under our contract. But I think that the hospitals see them as available, and certainly the wages that they're going to be making in America are considerably more than the wages that they'd be making in their home country. So it's a very big incentive for them to come here.
I just wanted to add that the fact that they make the same amount as the nurses in the hospital, the same thing where I am, but they actually keep the wages down. because instead of increasing wages so more people will go into the profession, they artificially keep the wages down by pillaging other countries and artificially keep the salaries low.
My guests are two veteran registered nurses, Audrey Ludmer and Kim Armstrong. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with two veteran registered nurses about the impact of nursing cutbacks and the nursing shortage. Kim Armstrong works in a hospital in the Seattle-Tacoma area. Audrey Ludmer works in a hospital in Manhattan. Audrey Ludmer, you've been a nurse since 1968. What are some of the biggest changes you see in the nursing profession from 1968 to now, in terms of what's expected of you, how much support you have?
The biggest change has been in the amount of paperwork, the amount of documentation necessary. I spend a lot of time doing paper. At times, I spend more time with the paper than I do with the patient, which is a bizarre and ridiculous thing when you think about it. But in order to satisfy JCO, Medicaid, Medicare, HMOs, all the other insurance companies, there's tons of paperwork. And when I'm not doing paperwork, I'm sitting at a computer doing different kinds of work and different kinds of documentation on the computer. The computer is not at the patient's bedside. It's not anywhere near the patient. So therefore, the more time I spend on a computer, the less time I obviously spend with the patient. The other thing I wanted to say is that nursing has become increasingly complex. I'm expected to have a running knowledge, the basis of which wasn't even there in 1968.
Like what?
Disease entities, antibiotics. I remember when you had to know all the drugs. You know, now it's like a joke. Nobody knows all the drugs. It's just new medications on the market, new diseases, new pieces of instruments, new tests, new thoughts, new ideas, constant new re-education, new education, new products, new services. Patients are much, much, much more educated in what's going on and ask many more questions. It behooves you to know all the answers. Just the amount of physicians and what they're requiring and how they're requiring it and their turnover. Just your knowledge base is amazing. It's astounding.
Kim Armstrong, what are some of the biggest differences you've seen, some of the biggest changes you've seen from when you started in nursing to now?
Well, certainly patients are much, much, much sicker than they were 10 years ago.
How so?
I always use this analogy that the patients that are in the hospital right now on a med-surg floor would have been in the PCUs and ICUs 10 years ago. The ones that are on the floor now are much sicker. You have a much heavier load, much more complicated disease processes than what they were 10 years ago. Those patients that were in the hospital 10 years ago are being cared for at home now through home health services, if they're lucky. Many times they're being cared for by loved ones. The patients that are in the ICUs now, I'm afraid 10 years, 15 years ago, wouldn't have survived to be in the ICUs simply because our technology has increased so tremendously in the last 10 years that these patients were keeping patients alive that weren't alive 10 years ago.
So what practically does that mean for you as a nurse?
The knowledge base that you have to have of the new technologies, of the new drugs. Audrey mentioned the drugs. I think that there are now an average of 100 new drugs that come on the market each week. There is no way that we can keep up with that kind of knowledge. So we get a new drug on the board, and it's like you have to know what you're giving, and you have to stop, and you have to look at what it is and the effects of it and the effects of it and all the other drugs that the patient's taken at the time. And that without a lot of backup systems that we used to have with pharmacy help and stuff like that. I'm very concerned that the nurses are the in line because we're the ones that administer the drugs. We have started to become responsible, held responsible, and sometimes criminally responsible for those drugs. Nurses don't have, when they have hundreds of drugs sometimes to give in one shift, don't have the time to also be the backup system, but yet we have to be.
Do either of you have an example of a time when you feel you averted catastrophe by observing a mistake that was about to happen?
Yeah.
You want to tell the story?
We, in labor and delivery, give a drug called Pitocin. It's to make the uterus contract. It's in a mixture of 10 milliunits within 500 cc's. And a bag came, and it's mixed by pharmacy. A bag came up that was marked 100 milliunits per 500 cc's, or 100 units per 500 cc's. And when I caught it and called the pharmacy, that was what was in it. But if I had hung that on a patient inadvertently by not seeing where the decimal point was, we could have really easily killed a baby and a mother.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, and it may not be so much in Kim, but in my area where you have multiple physicians, and physician A writes one regimen, physician B writes a second, physician C writes a third, they make no sense together, and they don't talk to each other, and because they're each treating a different part of the person's body, as opposed to treating the patient, and it's the nurse that puts the pieces together and says, this is the patient, let me get you all in a room and talk to each other, or, you know, tries to run interference between the different parties to make sure that the patient is cared for properly.
Is this a bigger problem than it used to be because there are so many different areas of specialization now, and a patient in a hospital is likely to be seeing three or four different specialists?
Well, there's that they're seeing so many people, but it's also the fact that the length of stay has decreased dramatically, so that everybody's trying to do something very quickly.
I understand that you have both been patients in your own hospitals. Audrey Ledmer, from your point of view as a patient, what did you experience? What did you see right or wrong with the medical staff?
Unfortunately, I've been a patient multiple times, and I can see the changes. The last few times I was in a hospital, I made sure one of my friends stayed with me overnight. One of my friends who was a nurse stayed with me overnight. Each time I had surgery and was extremely out of it for the first few hours after the surgery, and I wanted to make sure there was somebody competent there to watch what was happening to me. And again, not because the nurses are bad and not because the nurses are cruel, but because they're just so overwhelmingly busy that I wanted to make sure that I got the care that I thought I should be getting. And having been a visitor in a hospital, I can tell you that that's not always the case, that nurses run in and run out because they're really running. They literally are running. They're on a treadmill running.
Kim Armstrong, what about you?
Well, I saw very caring nurses who wanted to do an excellent job, who didn't have the time to do it, that were working double shifts, that didn't have time and made assumptions that because I was a nurse, I could figure it out myself. And I think since it wasn't my area of expertise, I didn't have a clue. I saw things omitted that I knew had been ordered for me because I was very much my advocate and had it spelled out prior to coming in. And it was because of lack of time. It was because I was a lower priority patient on that floor because I was basically healthy with a minor problem that needed overnight hospitalization, that they were more concerned with their higher level of acuity patients, their sicker patients, that those patients needed them more than I did. I, too, had somebody stay with me overnight. And if I could say anything to consumers out there, is be aware of what's going on with yourself and what's going on within hospitals and advocate for yourself and ask questions and make somebody, no matter how short a time they are, answer those questions for you to your satisfaction.
Audrey Ledmer, any consumer advice you'd add?
I just want to say something about nursing because it sounds like we've been saying all the negative things, but there are a lot of extremely positive things. Nursing can be extremely rewarding. You can certainly make the difference in a person's life. Nurses are working as hard as they can against great odds at times to provide the best care that they possibly can.
I'd like to say one more thing. I agree with Audrey with what she said about nurses. We do a great job telling the world what's wrong with our profession, but not what's right with it. And I don't know of another profession that you can touch someone's life as effectively as you can in nursing. I wouldn't trade it for anything. If I was to do it over, I might make different choices, but I'd still be a nurse somehow, some way. People need to hear that it is a rewarding profession and it's challenging every day.
Well, thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kim Armstrong works in a hospital in the Seattle-Tacoma area. Audrey Ludmer works in a hospital in Manhattan. They're both registered nurses. This is Fresh Air.